EMSradio.com.
EMS information for the next generation.
The EMS Garage is a production of EMSradio.com. You can find us on Facebook, just search EMS Garage. You can find us on Twitter at EMS Garage. Email us, emsgarage@gmail.com, or call us, 303-720-6001.
This episode of the EMS Garage is brought to you by Audible.com. Over 85,000 titles to choose from in every genre: thrillers, business, romance, comedy, sci-fi, and more. Get a free audiobook download for your MP3 or iPod. Just go to www.audibletrial.com/EMS Garage.
The EMS Garage.
Okay, I got the DC on the phone. They want to know if you can handle that call as well. Just
confirming
you are checking the patient. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the EMS Garage. We're trying to stream live on Ustream, but not so much. Kind of a fail. We hope to get the streaming up at some point during this podcast, but if we don't, we're going to still talk about really cool topics and really enjoy something that I call Pinot Noir. My name is Chris Montero. I'm the Geeky Medic and the host of this great band of brothers, and I hope to bring you a lot of fun. Joining me first tonight is Brad Buck. He apparently thinks that our topic tonight is worthy of an entire hour, so we're going to try and talk about that. I have a feeling it's going to be. And then we'll introduce the other guests. Hello, Brad Buck. How are you?
Doing great, Chris. How are you tonight?
Pretty awesome. Pretty awesome.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Glad to be here. It's been quite a few episodes since last time I was able to make it on.
Far too long.
Yep, excited to be here.
Right on, man. Thanks. Thanks for coming on. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
No problem. Also joining
us. Thanks for allowing my subject.
Well, it was a good one, and I had to, as soon as I saw it, it kind of pissed me off too, so it was good. Also joining us tonight is Mr. Russell Stein, all the way from, I don't even know where Russell, oh wait, Tennessee, Nashville, Tennessee.
Memphis, Tennessee.
Memphis, dang it. So close. That close.
And no, I am not underwater.
Well, that's good to know.
Is the Mississippi? Mississippi is flooding.
Right. Well, yeah. Well, you know, just make sure you wear your high water pants. You'll be fine.
Yes.
Yeah. And how are you doing?
I'm doing fine. Hoping to go back to work next week. So
that's a good
thing.
It's been
a long 3 weeks sitting at home staring at the wall.
Does that really suck?
It does. When you're fielding calls from your coworkers and they're saying, "Hey man, we just did this or we just had that," and you're like, "Yeah, it's not very fun." So I'm looking forward to getting back into work and getting back into action at least for a couple more weeks before the really heavy stuff starts. So,
right on, cool. Well, you know, you're in our thoughts and prayers, and maybe we should come up with like a EMS 2.0 pink version or something like that for you.
The color is like a kind of a violet color. So.
Oh, okay. I didn't know what the color was. I knew it's like breast cancer, but all right. But it's not breast cancer.
It's on the other end of the torso.
It's the guy's version of breast cancer.
Yes.
Well, the girls don't get it, so, you know, it's all good.
Exactly.
Right on, brother. Hey, well, hang in there, and our thoughts and prayers are with you. And, you know, we really appreciate you, and it's all going to be good. I know it is, and you're young, and you're going to pull through, and it's going to be awesome. So, and you're going to have an awesome story to tell your children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren, and yeah, it'll be fine.
Aside from all the other EMS 2.0 stories that I'm going to have.
Well, those will be some of those you probably won't be able to tell, though. So, you know.
Yeah, we'll save that for when they hit college and beyond.
Exactly. Yeah, when they can actually drink beer. It'll be good.
Yeah.
Also joining us tonight, freshly off shift, but with a drink in his hand, Scott Keir. Hello, sir.
How are you? Fresh
Good.
Off the hill, too.
I know. Well, we're going to talk about that as our last segment, and that's going to be our what's going to be our sweet sponsored by ProMed Network segment. So you can't let me forget that tonight, because the EMS on the Hill sponsored by ProMed Network is going to be your segment. And I want to hear all about it, because I've been on the Hill before and I've been lobbying, and it's cool, and it's just, it gives you a sense of what this country's made of and what it's really about.
Absolutely. I mean, it was a great experience. It was like nothing I've ever experienced before, and it's infectious. I mean, it was such a good time, and I'd be happy to talk about it.
Right on. Well, I can't wait to talk more about it, and we'll get there here in a minute. But first, Mr. Brad Buck, you're the guy that has to tell us about your topic, because you're so passionate about it, I want to hear it from you. But I think we ought to set it up a little bit. I think you ought to start with the response times and then go into the other piece. So go ahead, Brad.
Wow, talking about throwing me out on the spot, sir. All right. My topic of discussion that I would like to go for tonight has to do with Kansas City Fire Department and post-merging takeover, whatever terminology you'd like to use, of Mast Ambulance in the Kansas City area. And I can rattle off one thing here to start with. Looking at an article from back in April of 2010, the fire chief of Kansas City, exact words, "This takeover will improve response times. Improved savings will be expected out of the deal." And so far, that is not happening. A study, and I'm trying to pull up here, Chris, and I apologize that I didn't have this pulled up right in front of me as quick as I had hoped to. And if you have it up, you can rattle off the numbers and when that date came out. But they, so far, part of the agreement with this is the council, the mayor and such, had said, you have to meet these response times. And they said this not going to be a problem. We can meet these response times the same way that MAST had met those response times. And that is not happening, and it has not happened yet at all in any of the time frames they have began to look at the response times of the ambulances since the fire department takeover. And I view that just right there is absolute positively epic failure, number one. I mean, I think that should have been the big push, is the things that were originally promised, you try to do. You make sure that those happen, because that's usually what services will do. And then it'll trickle off and it'll start to, I'll use the term, fail. But that's kind of what it's doing. And they're just, now there's been special meetings, and they're questioning it, and I don't know where it's going to necessarily go from here. But I just look at it. This is a year end of the fire department taking over that service and the things that they promised. And I think there are people in Kansas City, clearly people that were part of MAST and EMS providers across the country that thought this was a bad idea. Chris, I know you and I clearly believed that this was a bad idea from the start. MAST may not be the perfect, may not have been the perfect design for the service, because no one really knows what is optimal for the best EMS service, because there's pros and cons for everything. However, they were pretty well established, provided good care, response times were good. And then this takeover occurs, and it's just kind of spiraling down the toilet is the best way I can put it. And I believe that starting this off this soon, that Kansas City is destined to be the next Detroit, D.C. You know, there's a list of a few others that that really are in a world of turmoil right now and failing massively because of the mismanagement from up above.
Okay, so this is driving me crazy. We did talk about it on this show, and we said bad idea from the get-go. And so Kansas City Fire had a response time requirement of 90% of the time meeting the response time of 9 minutes or less within a certain area. in the north sector of their area, 70.01%, 9 months or less, year over year, or quarter over quarter, that's been the case. Central, which is probably where they probably have the most ambulances, is 89.47, very close to what they should be. However, the other two, not so much. 84.82%, and then that's in the east, and then the south is 79.54%. That, to me, is egregious. And there, you know, then the chief, I love his name, Smokey Dyer, the fire chief, says, you know, maybe we seem to be focusing that we have a problem, but my contention is that we don't have a problem, he said. But the city council is not happy. And we knew this was going to happen. I mean, when you throw resources at fire response and you say that EMS is part of what we do, not what we do and fire is part of what we do, you're going to get hosed every time. Chief Smokey Dyer is part of the problem. He's rapidly becoming part of the problem for, I guess maybe the poster child for why fire services shouldn't really be looking at taking over EMS in this day and age. And it's not that I'm not necessarily an advocate for this. I think that if it's done right, and if it's done well, and if it's done with the idea that it's not going to save money, it's going to actually probably cost more because we're used to a different model, and they accept that, that's fine. But when they say it's going to be cheaper and we're actually going to make money at it, they're grossly mistaken. What are you guys' thoughts?
Well, the one question that I have is how do they compare to MAST's response times a year and a half, 2 years ago? Is this a decrease in compliance or is it about the same? Because the one thing that stood out in any article that I read about this whole thing is you know, when the chief says we're doing the best we can each month and it's not possible to meet the mandated response times. Well, you know, a year ago you were stomping your feet and you were saying how great it was going to be and how the fire department was going to be able to run this service better and do a better job with this service. And now a year later you're saying, well, you know, we're just kind of not quite able to do what we want to do. And it's just amazing that they're taking this tactic and they're taking this out. And I was in the same boat as you guys were a year ago when I read all this. I could not believe that it was happening. I could not believe that MAST was going away. I could not believe that it was going to the fire department. And I was honestly wincing and bracing myself for what was to come. And it was very quiet for a number of months. And now reading everything that I've read over the last, you know, 72 hours that we put out here is just, it's really got me shaking my head.
Well, and I fundamentally reject his argument that they're not able to meet response times, those 9-minute response times, 90% of the time. Memphis is fire-based. Pretty much everybody knows this already. Is that we actually exceed response times 90% of the time. We make most of our calls, most of our ambulance calls within 6 minutes. My question is what are they judging as a response? Are they... How's their response matrix set up? Are they just sending an ambulance for these calls? Are those the only calls that they're counting? Or are they counting an ALS response within 9 minutes? If it's an ALS response within 9 minutes, that's pretty bad. And plus, that's against NFPA 1710, which is what they're supposed to be abiding by, which is where they get the 9 minutes or less thing from, is that if it's an ALS response in 9 minutes, that's horrible. That's among the worst. If it's a ambulance response within 9 minutes, and they're not sending a tiered response like Detroit is, like Detroit's not. That's why their ambulance response times are so terrible. Is that they need to be tiered response if they were going to properly integrate fire and EMS, and I'm sure that they did this with MAST before. Is that if they're trying to get an ALS response out, then 9 minutes is bad. So they need a tiered response in order to make that ALS response time.
Well, it's funny you should mention NFPA 1710, because in one of the blog posts that we'll put up on our website when this is done, Chief Dyer in 2001 was a huge supporter of NFPA 1710 and used it to get a sales tax passed to get 100 more firefighters added to improve response times to emergencies. Now, I have to have a gut check here because I do want the debate to go on, but the gut check is response times don't matter. I mean, let's be honest that if that's your only measurement, then it's really not true. So, you know, it's not necessarily, I mean, if that's how they're measuring their contract, you know, that's really not the best way to do it. But, I mean, that's what they set themselves up for, so they have to live by their own rules. However,
exactly. They made a promise. So
exactly, and that's that. I think that's exactly it. But then that begs the bigger issue of the Kansas City ambulance crew that reportedly didn't realize that they were driving a patient that was dead. So, Brad, do you want to set that one up, or do you want me to? Because, yeah, this one pisses me off.
I'll let you set it up, Chris. But one more thing, when you were to discuss the response times, and I truly believe, you know, that's not an important factor. However, for the fire service and with NFPA 1710 and some of the other things associated with that, NFPA and in the fire service, the response times are a very important factor and critiqued. And the other thing is that it matters only from the point that the public's perspective is that it matters. You know, and therefore you try to make the call as quickly as you possibly can. So until that education of the public can be completely accomplished and they understand that, look, whether the ambulance gets there in 6 minutes or your ambulance gets there in 16 minutes, it most likely, other than in these few rare instances, it's not going to make any sort of a difference. Because you get the public wanting to see lights and sirens and they want to know, well, you know, I hurt my finger. Why didn't you come with the lights and the sirens on? The response is, well, because you hurt your finger. And I think it'll just take that education to get us to the point of truly being able to show all the data and the research that the response times really are not a huge factor in treatment or patient outcomes. And now you can transition into your story. Sorry.
Perfect. Okay. So Kansas City ambulance crew reportedly unaware of a patient's death. So a patient being transferred between hospitals in Kansas City in a Kansas City ambulance allegedly died en route without the ambulance crew knowing it. The incident happened January 19th. The death of Frank M. Negro. I think I don't mean to mispronounce that. It's Nigro. So I think it's Negro. Jr., 52, was being taken from a Northland hospital to see a neurologist at St. Luke's near the Country Club Plaza. Negro's body was allegedly cold and gray when he arrived, and he had been dead for a while, relatives said. I think that's pretty damning. Apparently, he had suffered a stroke during some course of the day, went to the hospital. They said, ooh, gee, he started vomiting, had some right-sided numbness, and called 911, got sent to the ER, and the hospital said, there's a lesion in your neck, and we need to take you to a neurologist. The ambulance trip was in a near blizzard condition, took more than an hour. I guess my question is, I've been in an ambulance with a patient more than 3 hours. Didn't stop me from taking vitals every 15 minutes and making sure they were okay. Or, I don't know, talking to the patient. Does this scream of gross negligence?
Oh, absolutely and completely. Absolutely and completely. There can be no legitimate excuse that the medics could have for not noticing this. I cannot come up, and I've tried. Yeah, I've tried to figure out for tonight. I tried to come up with some form of a devil's advocate side, and I just cannot really come up with something that would be realistically legitimate to make the gripe or the defense. They just plainly did not pay attention. They did not assess the care, assess their patient. You have to touch, you have to pay attention to your patient. And what I haven't seen yet is any of the stuff on whether or not this patient was even on a cardiac monitor, what sort of monitoring was being done. But for that long of a transport, you know, a very stable patient, you know, you can do every 20 minutes, something like that on the interfacility stuff, or, the more critical, you know, you're doing a lot more frequently, but, you know, not 40 minutes or an hour or any of that. You know, you need to at least have a few sets of vital signs in there.
How about moving beyond vital signs, just moving to simply talking to your patient? I mean, this goes beyond the fire.
Exactly.
if you pick this patient up and then sit in the airway seat and do your thing for 45 minutes, guess what? That's not just an embarrassment for the fire department. That's an embarrassment to each of us, who every single person who has a paramedic patch on their shoulder. You know what I mean? I mean, I work tonight, and every patient I picked up, where was I? Whether it was a 5-minute transport or a 20-minute transport, I was sitting on the bench seat, I was talking to my patient, I was engaged in my patient, and I knew what was going on with them. You know, at what point do you just completely ignore your patient long enough for them to be gray and cold and dead? That's what just baffles me about this story. Forget about vital signs. I mean, you can tell if somebody's alive or dead just by looking at them.
And Scott, forget about – this has nothing to do with – you know, the previous conversation, it has nothing to do with, you know, fire department, you know, being the EMS provider. You know, this could be anyone, and we would be having this conversation tonight. It just so happens with the other news stories, the other problems that are already beginning to plague Kansas City Fire, and then this little one pops up on the screen. I mean, good grief, you know. I think old Chief Smokey there, he's got to be planning – that if things don't start to change pretty soon, it's going to be a bye-bye to him, and they're going to try to get someone to try to fix all of this.
Well, the impact
this is bad.
Oh, absolutely. Well, the impact here for me, my question as it applies to the fire department in this situation is, how did they handle it? What was done? Were these paramedics reviewed? Were they put on PIPs? Were they suspended? Were they fired? Was this swept under the rug? How did the fire department respond to this situation? That is what I want to know. That's the answer that I want.
And that's what's not being released, because though a lot of this, some of this stuff should be public information, and the fire chief will not release it. Last I saw, he's not releasing any of this stuff out to the media, to the public, to anyone to be able to see. They're keeping it completely locked up.
Well, that might be procedural as well, because they're obviously investigating if it's been in the news already. That may be a procedural thing. They may have to take certain steps before, you know, they take any sort of action. Like they have to review stuff. They can't deny somebody due process because of public outrage. That's the only issue.
Right. Well, and that I understand, but the way that I've seen it, and of course, with the grain of salt, it's a side of the story that's coming out in the media, is that that's not what they are being told is the reason. They're basically being told just, no, you can't have it. And maybe Kansas City Fire lacks a PIO or someone that has that grace with the media to properly explain things to them. I don't know.
And the call happened on January 19th, so we're looking at a situation that's 4 months old. You know what I mean? I mean, were city officials made aware of this? Was this reported to the city? And procedural or not, RJ, those are the questions that I would like to see answered. That's the big thing. I mean, did they say, well, geez, we have this huge issue on our hands, we just got to sweep this under the rug and move on and do something about it? Or has this been investigated prior to it becoming public outrage?
Yeah, and that's a valid point. And I'll say this, is that we have similar incidents right now that are being investigated here, obviously. Some of them have been in the news, some of them haven't, that are just about as old, if not older, that are still being investigated and still being handled, you know, at the upper echelons of the department, that, you know, created public outrage when it hit the news, but so far nothing's been done. And it's basically, you know, the same difference is that there's a procedure that has to be involved. There's an appeals process. The Civil Service Commission there may have already made their move, or there may have already been a move made. Well, this person is now appealing and now it's in arbitration. So they, you know, there's a longer process than what we're seeing. They may not be releasing, and like I said, they may not be releasing those documents just based on that. And it may just be that they don't have anybody at their headquarters with any tact to say, you know, this is why we can't release it, instead of just saying, no, you can't effing have it because that's the way it is, kind of deal. You know, you're the media kind of deal. It's
sorry.
That may be it.
Well, I'm the chief of my agency, and trust me, there would be nothing coming out of my agency about this. I'd be telling you about how pretty the moon was before I told you about this incident.
Yeah.
I mean, they're pretty smart about keeping it behind. However, a couple statements in here that kind of concern me a little bit. Records indicated his father was not hooked up to any monitors during transport, Negro said, and that was the son. And so that was number one. Acting city manager Troy Schlute, ooh, like Dwight Schlute. What's his name? Schrute. So this is Schlute. Noted this was his first questionable ambulance incident brought to his attention since the former Mast ambulance service was consolidated more than a year ago with Kansas City Fire Department. He said he asked the medical director who oversees the service for a full medical report on what issues we need to address regarding training so this type of incident or this type of issue does not repeat. How about fire the paramedics that did it? Sorry.
How about take it to the cadaver lab, say, I am a living person, this is a dead person.
It's the medical director's fault.
There you go. There it is.
Yeah, it's always the medic. It's always the guy with the biggest number of zeros after his name. Yeah, that's it. That makes sense.
How many spaces do you have on your paycheck? Okay, it's your fault.
Did you see though that the medical director states, how was it in the one? He operates independently from the fire department, but has a very close working relationship with them, trying to make sure that he can start to separate himself from this as much as he possibly can.
And he's a very smart man. I'm just a contractor. They only tell me what I need to do. Yeah.
Well, he's probably also a very naive individual.
You know what though,
Chris, and you know, you said you're a chief of the service, and you said nothing would get out. But you know what though, when the media comes knocking on your door, the least that you're going to say to them, and you know the media has knocked on their door about this, they had to have, and if they're not, then that's really horrible reporting. You're at least going to say, we do not comment about internal investigations. Done, end of story. But there is just nothing from them. You know what I mean?
Hey, Scott, I believe you and I sat in the same class where we learned some of that language in Dallas from Skip. Kind of, you know, when something like this all of a sudden falls in your lap, how to not handle it the wrong way and say the wrong things in public and learn the right motions, the right language to, you know, not condemn yourself, but to, you know, at least comment that it's being looked at. So, and that's what this, and I, maybe part of that is because this chief has already known, starting before this, that some of the promises he had made are just not going to happen.
Well, and I think it's interesting, too, because I love flip-flopping the debate here, because the other piece of it is still that response time. So, on April 28th, which was days before the allegation about the whole patient getting, you know, dying in the back of the ambulance came out, which was May 5th. On April 28th, the council, which was the city council for Kansas City, unanimously approved a resolution directing acting city manager Troy Schlute to recommend ways within 90 days to improve response times. And then the next line is, unfortunately, it's unclear where Schlute will get solid information. Turning to Fire Chief Smokey Dyer is worrisome. Dyer has recklessly stated he doesn't think response standards are a critical issue. What did he say when they tried to take over the ambulance?
Yeah,
response times would improve.
I'm going to paraphrase a picture that I posted on my blog about Detroit a long time ago. You know, where could you ever possibly get that sort of information about fire and EMS response? And there's the two dirigibles flying with fire and EMS written up there, like that PS3 commercial. You know, there's a ton of places he could go if they really wanted to know about anything that dealt with this. And I'm pretty sure that somebody here would be more than willing to talk to them if they would just pick up the phone and call us.
Can I just mention one thing? And the funniest, kind of most ironic thing about this whole story is Jay Fitch lives in their city, and they won't call. Jay Fitch, Dr. Jay Fitch, by the way. So turning to him, maybe so Dyer has recklessly stated he doesn't think response time standards are a critical issue. He quotes, "We just do the best we can each month," he told the Star last April. Or in April. Last September, Dreyer bristled when bad response times in Northland were discussed, saying, "We don't have a problem we need to fix." Gee, that sounds like a hard line to me. I don't know. I'm just kind of wondering if they even think there's a problem. Physicians should have a role in anything, Schlute recommends. They include Joe Salamone, the EMS medical director, and the Emergency Physicians Advisory Board recommends that ways to promote high-quality pre-hospital care. I don't know. Slow response times and killing people doesn't quite equate to high quality in my book. But, gee, I'm just the host, so I'll let you guys talk.
I would agree. The other thing, too, and one of my friends brought this up, guys, is that I am about 99% sure that prior to the takeover, MAST really did not do much at all with interfacility transfers of patients. They provided 911 to the city as a sole provider, and my understanding is that was basically about it. There were private and secondary services that were out there that were taking care of the other stuff. Now, so that raises that question on, did that all change with this takeover merger? And if so, did they add additional units, which I highly doubt, and manpower into the mix to make up for that? Because if prior to this, MAST had X amount of ambulances that were on the street, now they have that same amount, but they're also doing interfacility transfers of patients and such. That really sucks the resources dry. And it does take a different... There is some training, you know, many people believe that to provide an interfacility transfer of a patient doesn't require any real training. I've done 911 all these years. Well, but if you're actually taking someone that's critical and there's things going on, it takes something. You know, you have to know things to look for. You're managing some different areas, some different conditions than what you normally would in a 3-4 minute response time to a hospital, possibly. Something of that nature, and vice versa. If have only done facility transfers for your whole career, and suddenly you're dumped into a high volume 911 system, you're on a pretty serious learning curve to kind of get the hang of some of that. And so I'm curious I'd like to see some answers on that side of things as to, did this change for Kansas City Fire that they are doing these things now, or were they before? And you know, and how did that chunk of it transpire also? And maybe that would help too. It doesn't make this right, you know, by any means. You know, it's still a failure of epic proportions. But you know, then that could be a starting point for some training that these guys are going to need, and then it needs to go beyond that.
So I think we've named the podcast Dire Responses. And
Dire Need.
I could go either way. Dire Responses, Dire Need. I could go either way. Or a system in Dire Need or something like that. I don't know. I'm wavering. I'm writing it as we go. So we'll
figure through it out. Through the Smoky.
The Dire Need for the Smoky Mirrors.
Ooh. I don't know. Dire Need. Smoky Mirrors.
Dire Need of Smoky.
Yes. Well,
hey, has anybody seen anything from
Smoky Beers? Would be pretty good too.
Smoking beers. Mm. Has anybody seen anything from Paul Berardi, who was supposed to be the guy who was running the medical bureau?
Who's that?
Any comments from the deputy chief who formerly led the fire department's professional development bureau will lead the new medical bureau. I'm looking at an article from last year.
I remember stumbling across that in the last few days. I slaughtered the name also the way that you almost did there. I'm not sure how to pronounce it, but that rings a bell, and I haven't seen anything. Not even his name mentioned, actually.
Well, that's because the chief is the one that was really pushing for this, so he's the one that should be on the chopping block, if you ask me.
Oh, without a doubt.
I mean, that's just my personal opinion.
Right, but, and my personal opinion is that when the time comes, he won't be on the chopping block. He'll throw someone else out there.
Of course. It's always the guy with the lowest paycheck but can't point anyone else out.
The guy that said nothing during the whole incident, he's the one that will be slaughtered for it.
How did I end up with this?
It'll be a guy that's randomly promoted, and then he'll get fired.
Exactly. Poor guy. So if you're listening and you're at Kansas City Fire and you just got promoted, sorry.
Well, if this is anything, their EMS chief of operations is Tom Collins.
Who's that? Oh, Tom Collins. Nice. You could blame it on a drink.
There you go.
Sorry.
That's pretty good, aren't you? How'd you stumble across that?
I'm looking at their webpage right now. It's Tom Collins, EMS Division Chief of Operations. Developed in
Somalia. That's awesome. Oh, that's great. Now that we're on topics of fun, let's talk about something that's really important to me and should be important to you. That's Audible. audibletrial.com/EMS Garage. You can get a free book. Listen, people, free book. And if you're pretty happy about Osama bin Laden, why does that sound weird to me? Osama bin Laden. If you're happy that he got killed, why don't you read about, I don't know, a Navy SEAL wet team that kills people? That could be fun. SEAL Team 6, Howard Wasden, is a book that's on audible.com, narrated by Ray Porter, good guy. You can get this book free on audible.com. You don't have to take my recommendation. 85,000 titles in every genre. Again, you know my favorite genre is sci-fi, and I love it. audibletrial.com/EMS Garage. Go there, get a free trial, get the book, listen to it. If you don't like it, you can cancel the subscription, keep the book, but we're happy that you try to subscribe. I guarantee you're going to love it, and you're not going to want to get rid of it. I'm a gold subscriber myself and want to get more books. I may have to go to the platinum very soon. audibletrial.com/EMS Garage is your home for great Audible books. Do you guys have any picks, or do you guys listen to anything recently? No? Nobody's listening?
Not recently.
Oh, okay.
The last audio book that I had was The Road.
Ooh.
Which was excellent.
Excellent.
Yes.
Well, and if you're like my kids and my wife, you could be listening to the Does the Noise in My Head Bother You? A Rock and Roll Memoir by Steven Tyler. Another great book on Audible.
Yeah. I saw something. To read that one necessarily, but I bet you it would be an interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it depends.
Interesting read.
Is it read by Steven Tyler?
No, unfortunately, it's not. It's read by Jeremy
that
Davidson.
That would be hard.
That would be. I don't know. I think I actually like Steven Tyler.
Better than that would be Ozzy Osbourne's autobiography read by Ozzy. That would be purely entertaining.
You know what was a good book?
Chris, Ozzy's on. I didn't know he was involved in this.
Yeah, well, you never know. Hey, I got to tell you that one of my favorite books that I read, a bunch of years ago, when I was actually thinking about writing a novel, was the book that was kind of a semi-autobiography from Stephen King. And if you're interested in A, learning how to write a book, and B, learning how he wrote his books, that is a good book. I can't think of the name right now, but it is such a great book. Just Google Stephen King and look for his autobiography / book on how to write a book, and you'll see it. And man, some of the stuff that guy did while he was trying to write books, and the drugs he was on when he was writing certain books, you're like, oh, now I get it. Pretty amazing. So listen to business classic fiction, history, kids, mysteries, thrillers, romance, science and technology, sci-fi, fantasy, self-development. That's what I need. And teens and more. Audibletrial.com, EMS Garage. You'll get that 1 week, 2 week free trial and one audiobook download. Thanks for Audible for supporting our podcast, and we really appreciate their support. In fact, their run with us ends in 18 days. So if you want to get it, you got to get it soon. Audibletrial.com/EMS Garage. It is the 12th of May. By the 31st, this offer is gone. So we know that you're an insider now and you can listen to our stuff. All right. So now on to the really cool portion of the show. This is the, I need like little cool music right here. This is the ProMed Network, ProMedNetwork.com. And if you want to listen to some really cool other podcasts other than EMS Garage, and you're like, gee, these guys are just blowhards and I want to listen to something good, we have like 40 other programs. Go to ProMedNetwork.com. Or if you like what we do, you can actually listen to more there. ProMedNetwork.com has so much audio entertainment for people in the medical industry. They have nursing shows. They have physician shows. They have EMS shows. And if you're interested in our industry or you just want to learn more about what we do, go there and listen. So the ProMed Network feature of the week is EMS on the Hill. So, Scott, you were on the Hill. Tell us a little bit about that. How, you know, what did you do? Did you get it? Did you dress up in a suit?
Boy, where do I even start? It was just an absolutely incredible experience. It's an event that's put on by NAEMT. It's in its second year. Long story short, what they do is they group you up by states. They schedule meetings with your senators, with your representatives, and give you a list of topics and speaking points and leave behind material and just a kind of quick overview of how to deal with these people and some tips and tricks about talking to them and really kind of maintaining their attention and really just kind of promote teamwork within your state and your group. And then they just kind of set you loose on the hill and let you go. This year, the three topics that were selected, the first one was the Medicare reimbursement rates. I don't think it's a mystery or a surprise to anybody that we are totally underpaid and totally underfunded. And it's actually been pretty much proven that we are just about 6% underfunded across the board by when it comes to Medicare. And of course, you know, we all know that Medicare kind of sets the reimbursement rates for everything else as well. So, the first bill that we discussed was trying to increase that. The second one had to do with the D-block grant or the D-block frequencies bank. Long story short on that one is there's a group of frequencies that the government is debating actually auctioning off to private providers like private companies like T-Mobile, Sprint, AT&T for use of these frequencies for cell phones. The EMS community wants them for themselves so that, you know, for future technologies, for interoperability down the road, because I think we could all agree that interoperability between police, fire, and EMS is just incredibly poor when it comes to radio communications. So that was the second one that we hit. And the third one is, in my opinion, the most important one, and that's the public safety officer death benefits. The Dale Long Act is what it's called. Dale Long was an EMS provider in the state of Vermont who was killed in a car accident while on duty. His ambulance was struck at an intersection, and because he worked for a nonprofit organization rather than a state government or state government, federal government, or local government department, his family was not provided with any sort of government death benefits. The Dale Long Act actually extends those benefits to nonprofit organizations or nonprofit providers as well, with the hopes that the next step will be for-profit providers. That's something that's incredibly important to me, especially as somebody who works in the private industry as a paramedic and as a supervisor. I want to make sure that God forbid anything should ever happen, that my people are provided for and their families are provided for. In my opinion, that was the most important of the three because, as it stands now, you could have somebody who works for a nonprofit ambulance company covering a town, covering a municipality on a contract, and God forbid something happens and the police officer firefighter parish and the paramedic parishes, guess what? The families of the police officer and the firefighter are going to be, you know, they're going to get death benefits, government death benefits from the loss of their loved one. And the family of the paramedic are just going to be left out to dry. And I just really think that it's not right. So they set you up with these three topics and they put you out there. And we basically spent the day, three of us from the state of Massachusetts, popping around from office to office, meeting with senators, meeting with our representatives, meeting with their legislative assistants, and just really pushing and pitching these topics that we were all extremely passionate about. And it's the kind of thing that as it grows and as we go forward, really I think is going to have a lot of meaning for us. We lack a unified voice, and throughout the week, between NAEMT being up there and between AAA being up there with their Stars of Life, it really gave us just a common voice to get up there and really let these people know what's important to us as EMS providers. And it's just a terrific way to do that. And we had there was a really, really good turnout, but I mean, there's always room for more. We could always use more people. And the more people that we have, the louder our voice is going to be.
So did you find, we talked a little bit about this before the show. Did you find that did you actually get to talk to your representatives or senators at all, or was it more just the staffers?
For the most part, we met with staff. We met with one of the state or one of the representatives from Massachusetts, and I actually got to have coffee with Scott Brown in the morning. But it was also a busy day on the Hill, so we had a couple of people who actually got pulled away for votes and for other meetings. But we actually, you got a handshake, you got a hello, and it's really kind of interesting the way that everything is structured and the way that their offices are structured, and that these staffers that you're meeting with actually have a considerable amount of influence on policy. And the senators and the congressmen put a lot of weight on their shoulders, and it's so the hope is that the word was actually getting there. But I honestly felt like I was listened to. I felt like I was received, and I felt like our messages were listened to by these people.
Well, and it's funny you mentioned that, because every time I go there, I feel like so my first time in there, I'm like, why am I talking to these low-level lackeys? I mean, they don't even understand me. They don't get it. But your second time with them, third time with them, fourth time with them, or when they start to email you and ask you questions, then you've made a small impact into that. And you're right, Scott. I didn't think that, or at least I didn't understand the impact that they had on policy and pretty much everything that goes on, because what senator can know everything, or even representative can know anything about everything and everything about anything all the time? And that's very hard for them to do. So they rely a lot on their staff. And I don't know if you got to meet with their health advisors or who, but man, those people are on it and they get it. And for the most part, if you got to meet with a representative or a senator, that's pretty golden. And if you get more than 10 minutes of their time, you really have stolen a lot of their day. So I think the most I've had was 20 minutes, and I was so happy. And and when our congressman comes and sits next to us on his couch and starts asking us questions, I know we have his attention, and I know that in the 5 minutes I have to be eloquent, which I'm not always, and I have to at least engage him in a different way that he needs to understand what it is about us that we really find important and what people need. So I applaud you for going. I think it's great. And do you know how many people went?
I'm sorry, the last part of that broke up, Chris.
Oh, sorry. How many people went to
EMS? How many people went?
Yeah.
I want to say it was about 150. The numbers were kind of skewed a little bit. We had a few no-shows just because of everything that was going on in the South with the with the tornadoes and with the flooding, and a lot of people were pulled away to do their duty rather than represent everybody on the Hill. So an actual head count, I don't know, but I want to say it was about 150 people. I can tell you that the grand total from talking to one of the event planners, one of the consultants that they had about 240 or 250 actual meetings with senators and representatives set up throughout the day, which I think is a pretty impressive number.
I completely agree. Brad or Russell, do you guys have any experience kind of doing a little bit of, I don't want to call it hobnobbing, but at least doing some kind of advocacy at that level?
This, not at the national necessarily. I mean, I have touched base with a couple of ours in D.C., and now that this is over with and here shortly, I've got one who's a long-term senator who's only – he's within like 30, 40 minutes of where I live, is where his hometown is, his home still is. So he frequents there. But earlier this year in January, we had our state EMS Day on the Hill, and that was my first time of actually doing that. And it was a very amazing experience. But what I learned, being my first time, from the people that had done it many times is, you know, make contact with your representatives well in advance, multiple times. Try to have met them once or twice, and then that way, the time comes and they want to make some time for you. You've spoken with them, you kind of have a time set up, and they recognize you a little bit, and it just seemed to help things, help move things along a little bit more as far as trying to. And we, of course, that morning, everybody going, we have, you got your little talking points that everyone got them handed out to them, so here was the main talking points. And we get that from both our bureau chief is really involved with it. The state association is who puts it on, and I shouldn't say puts it on, but they support. We provide the bus to get people over there and everything else. And then our hired gun that the association has, our lobbyist, and he does a lot of work and kind of gets the people that are the good speakers and really have the good ideas or the great way of explaining things. He makes sure that they get with the appropriate people when we're all down there to try to get it taken care of. The only problem for us, unfortunately, is years ago it used to be it was our morning, and now we share it with community colleges. So you've got all these people from community colleges setting up booths and all these students, and it's a zoo, and it's unfortunate because we lose a lot of quality time on our important issues to what their important issues are.
Well, and I've gone to the local or the state legislature, and I've gone nationally. Two different experiences. I got to tell you, Scott, have you ever been to your state legislature to do some advocacy work or no?
Not yet. I'm hoping to in the future, but not yet.
Nice. I will tell you that they are different experiences, and for the main reason that those state legislators are pretty much on their own. They don't have a staff. They're the people that kind of have to know everything about everything, and they work really hard for their minuscule amount of money. Now, in Colorado, we have a bicameral house, so we have a House and Senate, just like the United States, but they're only in session 120 days a year. So you have got to, if you get their attention, it's good, and you've got to get it succinctly, quickly, and you have to have those talking points down. And I always find it's nice to have something to hand them, a one sheet page with our top issues on it. What do you want to know about this? And for many years, I've heard, because our state, I was the president of our state EMS association for a couple of years, and I was responsible for hiring our first lobbyist. And they said, why would you want to have a lobbyist if there's nothing in front of the people? And I said, well, we need to have a lobbyist all the time because they need to have an understanding that we are always responding. Just because we don't have a something in front of them this year, or we're not going for extra money or whatever, doesn't mean we can't have a lobbyist. And that's important. And it's important for us to always be in front of them and always carrying that message. And that's what the lobbyist did for us, and he's great. And almost 4 years after I've left that office, they still have the lobbyist. And, you know, that to me is important because we need a voice, and we can't always be down there because, you know, we have services to run and other things. So if you have a state EMS association, paramedic association, whatever the case may be, go in and A, join, B, be a part of them, and C, recommend that they get a lobbyist or be a lobbyist for your organization. There's nothing wrong with that.
Absolutely. And let me just share one more story with you, if I could, real quick. And I, of course, I didn't get enough guts to do this until later on in the day, but I kind of stole a page from Justin Shore's book. I walked in and we're talking to one of the representatives, one of the representatives' staff, and I said to her, I said, you know, can I ask you a question? And she said, yeah. I said, what do you know about what we do? Like what, you know, what do you know about what a paramedic does? And she looked at us and she said, honestly, I really don't know very much about what you do. So it was a really great chance for us to open up some dialogue and really kind of let these people know a little bit more about what we were all about. And it was just a terrific icebreaker with her. And I think she kind of walked out of there with just a little bit of a different attitude for who we were and what we were about.
I love that approach, and I think that just going in asking for money or asking them to increase Medicare for ambulance, I don't think they get that. But when you personalize it and say, listen, you know, here's what we do. We're out there. We're the last safety net for most people's health care in the United States. They're like, ooh. You'll see them sit up in their chair when you say stuff like that. And they'll be like, really? And I'll be like, you know, most of the calls we go on aren't about saving lives or blood and guts. It's about taking care of grandma who broke her hip on the way to the hospital. That's important. And guess what? Medicare's paying for that. And that's important for us to get more dollars to make sure that she has a good outcome in the end and make sure that we have the right equipment and we can pay people appropriately. But we have to have money for that reimbursement. And that's how you bring it all back around and they go, oh my God, I never looked at it that way. And it's just about getting that, again, that minute of hope. If I go, well, we're 6% underpaid, you know, blah, blah, blah. They're like, yeah, that's boring. But when you say, did you realize that yesterday we transported in our area 10 of your constituents and those people deserve healthcare? And do you know that we're the last, you know, you bring up all that or whatever. And they get that. I think at some level, every person can get in touch with human suffering. Good, bad, or indifferent, that is a good place to get people to come to. That it's not about blood and guts, and it's not about that. It's about helping people and being that safety net for healthcare.
You know, and I'm going to chime in here since I haven't said anything for about 15 minutes, is that what some people don't realize is that they can cop, you know, in the IAFF, they're a huge lobbying organization. I mean, FIREPAC is huge if you compare to other political action committees that are active on the Hill. They're huge, and you could actually borrow a page from the union's playbook about, you know, they have Fire Ops 101, which is basically where they explain firefighting to, you know, people in a day. You could adapt that for use in your organization and invite your local, politicians and city leaders and members of the community and explain, this is what we do. This is how it works. And if we don't have the resources to do what we do, then what we do can't be done. And this is what it means if we can't do it. And that's a huge tool that I've seen at work. It just recently worked here. We did a Fire Ops 101 here in Memphis, and one of the people that actually went through the class actually went back to the state house and delivered a key vote on a presumption bill that affects everyone. So you know, they added HIV to the list of diseases that if you contract it, it's assumed that you got it on the job. And that was something that everyone was opposed to. And he delivered a key vote after, you know, we explained that we're at a huge risk for this kind of stuff. And that's something that could be done, you know, in other places, and not just by the IFF, but by anybody that has the means and the resources to do it.
The other thing I think with some of that too is it's important that we're getting that message and that our elected officials understand what we do. But I think also to just the citizens, you know, a simple explanation of some little of kind of what we do on a daily basis, that, you know, we're taking your mother, your father, your neighbor when they call sick, and just a basic explanation of what it is. And I mean, if you kind of get a PSA like that out to some people, be it maybe not necessarily televised or whatnot, and then some of them that know the elected officials in your city, your county, the state, just some of that simple stuff starts to get out, and maybe that understanding is improved also.
You guys are making great points, and I think the word is you've got to advocate, and we've got to be advocates for what we do, and we can't. I guess it's time then that we, as the EMS 2.0 blah 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 generation, that we stand up and say it's time that we advocate for what we do. We can't rely on people in Washington to fix it. We can't rely on other people to do it. It's our voice, and it's about us, and it's about the ability to take what we do and make it better. And very soon, I hope I can tell you about something that was really cool that happened in my life, but it's still semi-top secret. So as soon as that comes, I tell you guys this almost every week, but man, there's so many cool things going on that it just kind of scares me. But I will tell you that there was something that happened very recently in Canada. And if you were following my Facebook or my tweets, you were supposed to figure out where I was flying the past 2 weeks, but we had like two or four responses. So you know what? Nobody wins any free stuff off my desk because nobody guessed enough right answers to get the stuff. So I had some really cool stuff. I had a whole Olympus beanie, scarf, and gloves. I had free Audible books. I had free Boingo wireless. And what else is on my desk? I had some Spirit Gum adhesive and remover I could have given you, and a free digital tape. So, you know, there was a lot of junk. Oh, I even have, hang on, what else? Oh, I have electrical tape on my desk as well. I'd have thrown any of that in a box and sent it to you, but nobody guessed the right amount of answers, so sorry. But, man, there are so many cool things going on in our industry that we have to start doing now. Because you know what? Culture change takes about 7 years. So if you want to see things change by, I don't know, 2019, you got to start doing it now. And that's not to say that things can't happen overnight. And this is a plug for our next week's show, but are you an EMS Egyptian? And that was this was an article written by David Koenig. And Dave Koenig, sorry. He hates it when I call him David. Dave Koenig, and he was writing about I guess linking our industry a little bit with what's going on in the Mideast and what has happened all over the world recently, and with Twitter and Facebook and things like that. Can we make a change in our industry in social media? Can we do things that people didn't really do before? Who is the next Jim Page of our generation? And I think Jim Page would hate me for saying this right now, but I think that it's important that we recognize that we have the ability to take this thing further and move it along. And it starts with people like Scott and people like Justin and people like Natalie going to the Hill last week and speaking our voice and saying, we're here, we paid for it out of our pocket, we're going to do it because we believe in it. And that, you know, I mean, what else can you do? I mean, that's important, and that's pride in our industry, and that's pride for what you do. And yeah, it's really pretty freaking cool. I don't know, Scott, did you like feel like your chest puff up like 20 times when you're standing there, like near the Heart Building going, this is really cool?
Oh, it was unbelievable. I mean, just the atmosphere, it was addictive. I mean, I could have spent a week up there just doing that, just going from office to office. It was just such a great atmosphere.
Well, yeah, and you feel empowered. I mean, you mm-hmm. really do. You're like, oh my gosh, I'm a citizen and I can make a difference today. It's weird. It's weird how our government system works like that. That we have the ability, even though there are times when you sit in your chair and go, I will never make a difference. But man, you go there one time and you're changed. I guarantee it.
Yeah. Cool. Very cool.
And it was really cool. Neat to have. Yeah, it was very cool. It was very cool to have NAEMT kind of give us that platform too, and we really have a lot to thank them for with that. I mean, like I said, it's the second year that they did it, and this year, the fee to do it was $20. It charged $20 per person.
It's nothing.
To help offset some costs. $20, and they set everything up for you. They arrange everything for you.
Wow.
They put everything, you know, they give you an itinerary. They give you everything that you could possibly need when you go up there.
That's amazing. Absolutely amazing. Well, great job, man. I appreciate you going. Next year, here's my challenge. Next year, I want to have, like, I don't know, 50,000 listeners a week. I don't know. B, I want clearly 10% of them to go, 10% of 50,000 to go and just speak our voice. Can you imagine 5,000 people walking around Capitol Hill with EMS uniforms on, trying to tell people what we do? I don't care if you're fire, I don't care if you're private, I don't care if you're public, not for profit, whatever. If you're up there and they see EMS and they see that star of life, they're going to be like, oh, these people mean business. And I will tell you that we will be able to move mountains with 5,000 people. 5,000 people, that's nothing. You guys had 150. That's my challenge for next year, 5,000 people. So anyway, we'll see if it actually comes to fruition. My name is Chris Montero. I'm the host of this crazy band of brothers, if you will. And tonight we're a band of brothers. We don't have any sisters on, but that's okay. And the video didn't work out. Sorry, we killed the stream. And we had to because it was killing my internet bandwidth. I think it's more of a bandwidth issue than anything else. My wife's going to kill me when I say, honey, I need more bandwidth. Can I get another internet connection into the house? Yeah, anyway, that's my geeky voice. Oh, maybe I always have a geeky voice. So, Mr. Scott Keir, thank you for joining us. Where can people find more information about you?
Mr. Chris Montero, thank you for having me. You can find me on the web at medicsbk.com. You can find me on Twitter at medicsbk. And also, if I could throw a quick plug in here for the Massachusetts EMS Conference, which is coming up in November. We're going to have some great speakers and some great content. And, you know, while it's geared towards folks from Massachusetts, people from anywhere are more than welcome to attend, and it's going to be a really, really great event this year.
When's your conference? Do you know what weekend?
It is November 4th and 5th.
Oh, so, man.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, because our state EMS conference in Colorado is the first weekend of November. Ah.
Yep, and actually it's the same thing for New Jersey, too. Of course, that seems to be a really popular time. But I can tell you, I can't obviously make any announcements for speakers, but if all goes how it looks like it's going to go, there are going to be some familiar names to the podcasting community that are going to be there, which makes me really excited.
Where's my invite, baby? Huh?
Oh, it's open. It's open.
Oh, that's really cool. The Colorado conference is November 3rd through the 6th. We have about 1,100 attendees per day, so it's kind of a fun event. And considering we only have a 15,000 registered EMTs, paramedics, and whatnot in the state of Colorado, that's kind of a nice turnout. So we always appreciate when they come to lovely Keystone, and hopefully they're not skiing. So where's your conference in Massachusetts?
It's actually going to be right here in Springfield where I am. The website for it, if I didn't mention it, is massemsconference.com.
Very cool. Thanks, yes, man. Russell Stein, where can people find out more information about you?
About me? I don't know why anybody would want to know about me. Hybridmedic.com, Hybridmedic on Twitter. And I'm also on Facebook, Hybridmedic. And hybridmedic@gmail.com. If you just want to send me a random email, that would be cool. Also, and I'm going to plug something that we're doing here shortly, is pay attention to the blog, May 24th. Also pay attention to my Ustream account or channel or whatever it is. We're going to be live streaming a special event from downtown here in Memphis, and we're going to have a very special guest from GEMS here with us. So
I heard. I'm excited. I can't wait.
It's going to be awesome.
When is that? May 24th?
Yes.
Right on. May 24th. Don't miss it. And you guys going to record it so you can watch it later?
Yes, we are.
Right on. And what's the Ustream channel, or do you have it yet?
I think it's Hybrid Medic too, as well. So,
sweet.
It's just Hybrid Medic all over the place. If you can't find me, then you're then living under a rock.
And you don't. Oh, that's a Geico commercial. That's awesome.
Uh-huh.
Right on, man. Thanks a lot, Mr. Brad Buck. Where can people find you?
You can find me at emsstandingorders.com. You can also find us on iTunes now. So far, all of our podcasts that we've recorded are now available for download. And also, along with a few that really never were recorded, we've done a couple of special little quirky things for quick little bits of education. You can find me on Facebook, on Twitter, not Twitter. Not really sure what Twitter is. And I have a very neglected blog that I really need to try to get back to writing.
If yours is neglected, mine is far more worse.
I never even knew that you had a blog, so I guess so.
And Chris, there you go. Case in point.
That's it.
Oh, gosh, you're done. Sorry. I was waiting for more information. All right. Well, sweet. A couple things about me. ChrisMontero.com is really bad. Hang on. I'm looking. April 3rd, 2010 is my last post. That's awesome.
Did it say happy birthday, Scott Keir, on it?
No, it did not. Is that your birthday?
Yeah, it is.
April 10th? Wow, my son's April 11th. That's awesome.
Oh, April 3rd.
April 3rd. I'm sorry. He's April 11th. You're April 3rd, 2010. That's where I was getting. Right on. Well, cool, dude. So maybe I'll try and write about it. I don't know. I'm just... I hate writing. I really, really, really... it's not that I hate it. I just don't enjoy it because I find no joy in doing it. So anyway, whatever. But a couple things about me. Thank you guys for listening. I really do appreciate it, and I really can't thank you enough. There really are some exciting things coming. I can't talk about it because it's killing me. And you know me, I can't keep a secret. But I know that they're really cool, and they're actually coming along very soon. On a personal note, I talked about this months ago, but I couldn't post it, so I actually had to cut it out of the episode where I talked about it. And I think Brad was actually... That may have been the last episode Brad was on. I recently was nominated and won, and I'm very humbled by the EMS 10 award, and I was named a top 10 innovator. Remarkably, not for this show. It was for something else I'm doing with my service, and I was very humbled. I'm with a group of very esteemed colleagues that are amazing. People like David Aber, Jeffrey, I'm going to mess up his name, Dumerth. Ray Fowler, Greg Fries from EMS Educast, David Hiltz, James Logan, Nicholas Miller, Daniel Patterson, who's a great researcher, PhD, and loves EMS, and Tanya Siloway, who lives in my state. So we had two people from my state that were nominated and won. So I have to tell you that I am deeply honored to be in a group like that, that those people were recognized for their innovative stuff. The stuff that they're doing, although they messed up my title, but it's all right. But the innovative stuff that they're doing, and we were honored with a dinner and had about 90 or 100 guests at EMS today. And the award still sits in my bedroom here, but thank you very much. And if you want to read more about what I did and why they nominated me and why I'm deeply humbled, you can read the gems.com webpage, or you can just go to the most recent edition of Gems and pull out the big insert, and it talks about the EMS 10 awards. And again, I'm deeply humbled and honored. So thank you guys for listening. And as always, you will find us next week on the EMS Garage when we talk about more issues that concern you in EMS. And I guarantee it's going to be a lot of fun because next week is EMS week. But before that, you'll probably be listening to this during EMS week. So happy EMS week, and we appreciate it.